this is just unbelievable. Welcome. Welcome to Bright Videos News. It is Wednesday, July 8th, I believe. July 8th, 2026. I'm Mike Adams. I'm laughing because of what's happening in New York City with this building is about to collapse because, well, it's an old Pfizer headquarters building. I think it's no longer owned by Pfizer, but there was a contractor that was reworking the building to turn it into residential units, which seems very difficult because of, you know, plumbing and things like that. But apparently they were adding 16 new floors to this building, which I think it started out as a 30-something story building. So they were adding 16 floors, and somebody forgot to add the support beams. You know, you have to have sufficient steel and concrete, etc. Like, somebody's got to engineer the thing if you're going to just slap 16 floors on top, and apparently that never happened. And now the building appears to be partially collapsing. And so I want to play a couple of videos for you, but also tell you that today we're going to cover the war is back on in the Middle East. It's back on. The bombings are happening. The ships are being attacked. The strait is totally closed yet again, just as we said would happen. And also, I've got an interview with Dr. Brian Hooker from Children's Health Defense coming up that you won't want to miss. So let me show you this video quickly. This is a video from Spectrum News, New York One, looks like. And it's just a few seconds showing a drone. Well, let me just play it for you. Here we go. So this is apparently a drone flying in front of this building. And as it zooms in, you can see one of these big steel I-beams is buckled almost in half. And we've got another video here of apparently a union worker. I think he says he's the head of a local union, the steam fitters that does fire protection. Steam pipe fitters that does fire protection. And he's saying that for much of this floor, everything's folded in half. You know, the I-beam, the walls, and there are some other things we'll show you coming up. So that's bad. Looks like part of the building just pancaked. Yeah, so let me show you this other video here of the guy explaining this. Here we go.
We're steam fitters, Local 638. We're doing the fire protection in this building. And what happened here was this building was renovated, and they were going to add another 16 stories to it. But at that point, you need to add more steel. And they obviously didn't add the right amount of steel. So the north side of that building is crumbling. The I-beams are bending like cigarettes in there, which is super dangerous. So I'm assuming they're going to evacuate everyone on the north side of 43rd Street. So, you know, we're a union. Steam fitters, the union iron workers went after this job. They lost it pretty much off profit, is what they're looking to do. The contractor that's over here, so we're New York City, we build it right, we build it the first time, and they chose profit over safety and put my members and every construction worker over here in jeopardy.
Cliff, can you walk us through what's it going to take to get this back up to code, get this back safe?
You're going to have engineers in here like you wouldn't believe, making sure that everything is supported. I don't know what's going to happen with the other side of the building now. Time will tell. How much did it sink? How much more is it going to sink? That's the question.
So you had members up there at the time?
All the members right here.
They were up there. What did they see? What did they...
Cracking windows, bent beams, floor, concrete was falling from the roof below, and they brought it up, and then they had to evacuate the job immediately. So... And here we are now. We know that's the situation now. What we want is responsible construction in New York City. That's all we want. We don't need you to put profits over and crunch wages down and pay people less just so you can make a couple more bucks while renting your apartments out. That's what we want. So, and then look what happens. We hear reports of the building potentially leaning over. It's the walls that are currently being built in there. You have studs and you have sheetrock. They're bent in half right now. That's how much it's dropped on that side of the building. I have photos. I can send them to you guys. You can put them on whatever you want to do.
So the crew has known about this for a little while, you think?
No, this just started happening today, and it happened fast. You know what I mean? Because they just keep adding. And as you add, you put more weight. And when you put more weight, that's what's going to happen when it's not engineered correctly or installed incorrectly.
Timeline-wise, can you walk us through how long you see this?
I don't see anyone coming back in this job for a month, at least.
So that video, apparently from freedomnews.tv, and what, Scootercaster New York is the channel I saw that on. I always like to give people credit. The guy talking there, apparently the union worker, or union leader, it seems, was saying that the sheetrock, the walls are folded in half. And that apparently they did not use sufficient quantities of steel to prop up this building. Now, remember, this is Mamdani's New York. Now, not that it's his fault. He wasn't on this project. But it is an indication that something's not right in the Big Apple, right? Something's not right when your buildings start falling down because, you know, I've lived in other countries, right? I've lived in South America. I've lived in Taiwan. And I've traveled extensively around the world. This is the kind of thing that you used to see in, let's say, Southeast Asia a few decades ago, where there were effectively no building codes. And somebody would just take a building. In fact, I remember this happening in Taiwan. I saw this on the news in Taiwan back in the 1990s, where there would be a department store, which would be a 7-story building. It's very common in Asia to have department stores in like a high-rise building. And then they would decide to add another floor. So they would just go up there and just like tack on a whole new floor with all the weight and all the concrete and everything that goes with a new floor. And then there'd be a relatively small earthquake and, you know, a couple of the floors would just collapse and kill a couple hundred people. This was actually pretty common back in the 1980s and 1990s in a lot of nations, and maybe today it's still common in certain countries. But it's not supposed to happen in New York City, where apparently they have some of the strongest, most stringent building codes in the world. How did this happen? Somebody just say, yeah, slap on 16 more floors. Steel? We don't need steel. We're buoyed by hopium. We're just going to look toward the sky. We're just going to say it's good. You know, it sounds like Trump's economy or the stock market under Trump. It's like, everybody just has to be optimistic. Stop being a doom and gloomer. Stop saying we need more steel. You know, stop pointing out critical failures like floors buckling in half. You know, stop blackpilling everybody. We don't need, you know, the 7th floor. We'll just build on top of it. If it pancakes, we'll just skip it and go to 8th floor. That's what this is like. Pretty wild. So what are they going to do? And by the way, it's also snarled downtown Manhattan, you know, for a few square blocks. I can't imagine why. I can't imagine a Pfizer building causing clotting in the middle of the artery of a city. Huh? What are the odds of that happening? Huh? It also makes me wonder if these columns are buckling, then, you know, something's wrong. They need to have a Genesis concert. You might say, why? Why Genesis? Well, if the columns are buckling, then they need to fill columns, is what that's all about. And hence Genesis. For those of you who are my age, you get that joke, so thank you very much. And if the building collapses, everybody can move out and live in a home by the sea, I think, is where that goes. No, but the question is this building going to collapse in the middle of New York City? Well, if they want to bring it down, we know who to call. We know some teams that can bring down buildings in New York City right in their own footprint with a symmetrical, cascading, controlled demolition. Those teams, I'm pretty sure, are still around. So if they need that to happen, they know who to call. All right, now in somewhat related news, Senator Mitch McConnell is believed by many to have already died. Now, we can't confirm that. According to official reports, he's in the hospital. Turns out that if he passes away before August 3rd, not quite a month away, then there will be a special election for his Senate seat, and Thomas Massie could run for that special election and probably win. So what many people suspect is happening is they think Mitch McConnell died a couple of weeks ago with a heart attack, and that they're faking like he's still alive, and many people think his wife is a spy for the CCP. Again, I can't confirm that. But there are a lot of financial ties to China-based companies. And, you know, you can go down that rabbit hole if you want to. But I'm just wondering, if the rule is that U.S. senators have to have a heartbeat and brainwave function in order to function as a senator, then I think there's a whole bunch of senators that need to be removed from office, because I can't tell that any of them, or hardly any, are functioning, including Senator Ted Cruz from Texas. I'm like, well, occasionally we do see Ted Cruz talking, but how do we know that's real? Who knows? But Mitch McConnell, apparently they arranged for some what looks like fake phone calls, and three or four prominent people tied to politics pushed out an announcement today on social media claiming that they had spoken with Mitch McConnell. Each one said for about 20 minutes. One person said exactly 17 minutes, which is very odd. Who has a phone call with a friend and then clocks it to 17 minutes? That's strange. And each of these people also said that they talked with Mitch McConnell about all kinds of things, this and that, and he was fine, and he was happy that people were rooting for him, etc. You know, all seemingly nonsense. Looks like a cover story. And imagine what the establishment GOP would do to try to pretend like this man's still alive if he isn't. It's like Weekend at Bernie's in the U.S. Senate. They're going to prop him up on a stick, you know, with puppet strings and everything. Hi, I'm Mitch McConnell, you know, and whatever, like, you know, flapping his jaw with a hand puppet, whatever is necessary to try to, you know, pretend like he's still alive, like he can still vote. And they'll vote for him, you know, because he's a reliable neocon. So I think the rest of us should demand proof of life. Like, is this guy still alive? Let's see it. If he can have three conversations with friends of 20 minutes duration, nearly, why can't he call in to Fox News or something? You know, why can't he respond to CNN? Why can't we have proof of life? He's a senator. He's supposed to represent the American people. What if he's already gone? Now, the funniest comment on all of this comes from Thomas Massie, Representative Massie. He satirically said, quote, I spoke to McConnell for about 20 minutes this morning. He said we should end the war with Iran, quit giving aid to Israel, stop spying on Americans without a warrant, and he's really sorry about how my primary turned out. So there we go. Best post of the day from Representative Thomas Massie. All right, so that's some of what's going on right now. Oh my goodness. I'm going to play some special reports for you here. One that I just recorded earlier about the war with Iran and how it is back on like Donkey Kong. Yeah, I know. It sucks being right about these things when I'm predicting essentially endless war. But that's the agenda. You know, that's what's on the menu, and so they are delivering that. So we'll go to those reports and then today's interview with Dr. Brian Hooker coming up a little bit later. So enjoy the rest of the show. Here we go. Well, the war with Iran is back on. The bombings have resumed. Let me update you on that situation. I believe it started when the U.S. was trying to guide some tankers and ships through the southern portion of the Strait of Hormuz. This was like 2 days ago, I believe, roughly. And that's the shoreline closer to Oman, which Iran doesn't want ships to use. So Iran is asserting control over the traffic through the Strait of Hormuz and has granted safe passage to ships through the northern channel, which is closer to the Iranian border. You know, it's Iran's territorial waters there, all the way out to, I think, 11 nautical miles from shore. But the U.S. Didn't want ships to take that route because the U.S. wants to sneak a bunch of ships through the strait without paying, you know, any kind of fees to Iran. So as these tankers, it was anywhere from 3 to 5, is my understanding, as they were trying to sail through the southern portion of the strait, the IRGC warned them and said, you know, turn around and stop, and they didn't. And so they were struck by drones, they were hit, some of them were set on fire partially. I don't think any of them were totally sunk. but they were kinetically attacked. And then the United States said, well, we can't stand for that. And so the U.S. has bombed Iran, hitting, apparently, according to CENTCOM, striking 80 targets in a response to, quote, Iran's latest attacks on commercial vessels transiting the Strait of Hormuz. So CENTCOM says U.S. forces struck Iranian air defense systems and coastal radar sites, anti-ship missile capabilities, and small boats. I thought Trump said we already destroyed their entire navy, so where did the small boats come from? Let's see. Anyway, CENTCOM says that they bombed the snot out of these targets in southern Iran. So then Iran has now begun retaliatory strikes against the U.S. and has fired anti-ship cruise missiles and drones at U.S. Navy warships. I don't know if any of those have struck Navy warships, too early to know, but those warships apparently are in the Sea of Oman, so probably some distance from the strait, actually, you know, to the south there. And Iran is saying, you know, look, we're going to assert control over the Strait of Hormuz. Professor Robert Pape, who I interviewed, University of Chicago, says, quote, Trump is playing with nationalist fire by striking civilian targets in Iran, with millions demanding revenge at the Supreme Leader's funeral. Yeah, don't forget, this, right now, the funeral of the Ayatollah Khamenei is ongoing. Apparently, it's the largest funeral in the world ever, as far as I can tell. I'm not aware of any funeral that's ever been larger in terms of the attendance. But Professor Pape goes on and says, quote, Trump just handed the regime a clear trigger for major retaliation. The entire world economy is now at risk. Yeah. Marjorie Taylor Greene says we are back to bombing Iran during the ceasefire for the Iran war that is not a war because Iran bombed a vessel for crossing the Strait of Hormuz that they don't control, yet they apparently do control. Not sure how they bombed the vessel because we have totally and completely obliterated their military and beat them in the war that is not a war like 40 times now. She's being obviously sarcastic, mocking Trump. She says, I'm so glad that Trump ran for president to end forever foreign wars. Otherwise, I might start thinking this war that is not a war that we won like 40 times is starting to turn into another forever foreign war in the Middle East. She's correct about that. Good thing, she says, Pete Hegseth, Secretary of the Department of Defense, war, is headed to Israel to take orders from, ask for advice on how to totally wipe out Iran, bring peace. I'm totally sure no one in the executive branch or donors will do any sort of insider trading based on super duper secret military decisions. You know, the kind based on intelligence that Congress is going to fuse with Israel's military after they all vote to pass the National Defense Authorization Act, because this is exactly what we all voted for when we said make America great again. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So good post from MTG there. She's mocking Trump and Hegseth, who always deserves to be mocked brutally. Oh, and I'm seeing this post. I just have to read it for you. It's from a Kentucky Statesman on X. Unrelated, but hilarious. The fact that the GOP establishment ran a PSYOP where multiple people claimed to have talked to Mitch McConnell on the phone this morning, the day after people started demanding proof of life, only proves that he's dead. You gotta put a little English on the ball when you say he's dead. Probably he's dead. We're gonna miss the turtle. So I want to bring your attention to the fact that, of course, oil is spiking again. And, of course, the oil supply shock that I've been warning about, that Dr. Chris Martinson has been warning about, and so many of us, Michael Yon and others, that is about to kick in a very harsh manner. We are talking motor oil shortages in the United States are about to become reality in, looks like, less than 1 month. And then the diesel shortages, and I'm not saying that we're going to run out of diesel, but we will have scarcity and prices are going to go through the roof for both gasoline and diesel. And of course, you know, jet fuel on top of that. If you thought airfare was crazy right now, wait until September. It's going to get even crazier. All because, of course, Trump is taking orders from Netanyahu to continue the war, to cause global chaos, as also NATO continues to hammer Russia, not only attacking more Russian refineries, but the other thing that just happened is that part of Russia's oil tanker fleet, or I should say tankers that are moving Russian oil, apparently 7 or 8 of them just got hit and some completely blown up in the last day or so by Ukrainian drone attacks. So Ukraine is finding a lot of targets with the European-provided drones, even though Russia is hammering Ukraine very aggressively with Iskanders and Kinzhals and ballistic missiles on top of the hypersonic missiles. And so that situation is escalating. But the point is that oil is in the crosshairs in both of these conflicts, or oil refining, oil, you know, production, oil output, or let me say it correctly, the refined product output is suffering both out of Russia and also out of course, the Middle East. This is happening at the same time. And it's clear that this is engineered. On top of the fertilizer shortages and the helium shortages and the sulfuric acid and all these other things that we've talked about, it's clear this is engineered and it's designed to create a global energy crisis. And it's only a matter of time now before the buffer runs out. The Strategic Petroleum Reserve in the United States is at the lowest level that it has been since the 1980s, I believe, when they were filling it. You know, the only reason it was low then was because they hadn't filled it all yet. And these are, some of these are salt caves, you know, and it's unclear how sledgy and salty they are in terms of what has mixed with the oil exactly that's been sitting in those salt caves. You know, the lower levels of oil in there, the high density sludgy stuff at the bottom, probably not usable in your fuel tank. I'm just guessing. Maybe they could use it in New York City to shore up, you know, collapsing buildings and such. I don't know. Might have some use. But what it means for you and I is that energy costs, anything related to hydrocarbons, it's going to get crazy expensive. I still see oil at $200 a barrel this year, despite all the efforts in the paper markets to try to artificially suppress the price and keep it low. You know, remember what I've said in the game of rock, paper, scissors, oil, that oil beats paper. Like what? Paper beats scissors. Wait, is that right? Paper covers rock. Rock smashes scissors. Oil wets the paper. Oil saturates the paper. So rock, paper, scissors, oil. Oil beats paper. Just in case you're wondering the rules of that game. So they're not going to be able to keep the paper markets going or hiding the real price of actual hydrocarbons forever. And I think that effort begins to really falter starting in about 1 to 1.5 months and certainly accelerating through September, October, and right into Election Day, which is going to be catastrophic for the GOP. Catastrophic. Oh, and I forgot to mention that the United States has revoked the so-called license that they say allowed Iran to sell its oil through roughly the end of August. That was a sanctions waiver because Iranian oil has been sanctioned, you know, for decades. So that has been revoked. So basically, the MOU is dead at this point, just as I predicted, told you that we would not have peace. And I know all these, you know, the Trump MAGA-tards are out there claiming, oh, we have peace. Trump is the greatest. It's a golden age. Yeah, good luck with that. You know, after Trump fools you 42 times, you might want to rethink your gullibility, right? It's like, look in the mirror, wake up and smell the coffee. You've been lied to yet again. And again, and again, 42 times. So no, we're not going to have peace. The MOU is dead. And what that means is that Iran's oil won't be now contributing to the oil supply of Western nations because the sanctions are back on. And that means we're going to have more of a supply shock shortage of this global commodity. And yes, it will impact the United States. Prices will go up, supply will go down, and many countries are going to move into an emergency posture on this, just as Japan is facing a critical crisis with its, you know, 10-year treasury bonds that I covered yesterday, and that's going to spill over into the U.S. treasury debt market, and it's going to be catastrophic for the West one way or another, especially if Japan starts selling off U.S. treasuries, which it may have to do to buy oil at the higher prices, you know, or to buy gas to keep the Japanese economy running. It's going to have to sell something, and the most obvious asset is U.S. treasuries. So there you go. Note that in all of this, I said, and I've heard Scott Ritter say this and others, we have said that the U.S. is agreement incapable. In other words, the American empire is incapable of honoring any agreement that it makes with any nation on anything. This has been proven again and again and again involving, you know, Russia and Europe and also Iran multiple times. I mean, normally we say, hey, let's negotiate, and then the U.S. bombs and kills the negotiators as they're traveling to the negotiation location. That's the kind of, you know, goodwill that the American empire expresses on a regular basis. The U.S. is frankly just incapable of honoring any agreement whatsoever. And so now, what I predict is going to happen next is that we will see the closure of the Bab el-Mandeb Strait, which of course is the choke point on the way to the Red Sea and the Suez Canal, which will, like, okay, let me put it this way. If the closure of the Strait of Hormuz is a stranglehold on the world's energy supply, then closing the Suez Canal effectively on top of that is like, I don't know, clamping down on the jugular with a 1,000-ton press or something. It's like smashing any possibility of the circulation in the body. This is going to be catastrophic for the world if Bab el-Mandeb is closed off, and that appears to be the next escalation that we are likely to see again. Also, in Bahrain, some ballistic missiles from Iran have apparently been arriving and hitting, I guess, U.S. military bases there, which I thought were already destroyed. But maybe there's been some rebuilding and some of those things are being destroyed. I don't know. It's kind of early. I guess we'll know more over the next day or two. But the bottom line is, this is escalating now. Energy is going to become more scarce. The U.S. economy is going to crater even more rapidly because of this. And probably this is going to head to a U.S. invasion of Iran, which will be absolutely catastrophic for the Trump regime, and it may spell the end of Trump's political career and have him go down in history in shame as the worst president ever that made the worst military mistake of all time. That's quite easily how this could end up. And he's just fallen for it every step of the way, falling for it to do the bidding of Netanyahu. Unbelievable. The IRGC, meanwhile, says that the U.S. will not, under any circumstances, be allowed to interfere in the Strait of Hormuz. And I believe Iran is sincere in that, whereas you can't believe anything the U.S. says. You can actually count on these kinds of statements out of Iran, because this is their ace card. You know, they are holding all the cards just in terms of geography because of their position over the Strait of Hormuz. That is their ticket to, you know, sitting at the big boys table in the new multipolar world. They're not going to give that up, not under any circumstances. And so, you know, you hear Marco Rubio in sheer delusion talking about, oh, we're never going to let them control the Strait of Hormuz or charge a toll or anything like that. Dude, you're delusional. If you think that Iran is going to just give up total control over the Strait of Hormuz after all of this, you're absolutely delusional. Iran is going to hold out until the West cannot handle the pain of the energy strangulation. And that day is coming. It's not that far away. You know, you think about the loss of oil, the loss of gas, the loss of helium, all these other things, even polyethylene and so on, and fertilizer. This is going to start hitting home in a very painful way for the West, not just the United States, but, you know, Canada and Western European countries and Australia, etc. As the economic consequences of that become more and more severe, it will become politically impossible for politicians like Trump to continue to endure this. And eventually, the United States of America will be forced to accept Iran's control over the Strait of Hormuz, period. Geography says so. And God gave that geography to Iran, which means that God handed Iran that gift of control over, you know, over the world's energy flows. And Trump is finding out that you can't bomb God into compliance. You know, you can bomb Iran, but you can't bomb away the Strait of Hormuz that was created by God. You see what I mean? Like, fighting against the Strait of Hormuz is like going to war against God. It's just not going to work. That's what Trump is finding out. Even if you have Satan on your side, which he does with, you know, Bibi Netanyahu, even Satan can't bomb away the Strait of Hormuz, it turns out. So what I'm trying to point out here is that we are now about to be hit with multiple shocks, not only the Bank of Japan situation, possibly the selling off of U.S. Treasuries, but also an energy supply shock that has now clearly been made worse, far worse, and, you know, with no solution anywhere in sight. At the same time that we're facing fertilizer shortages for the fall planting season in the Northern Hemisphere, that's going to lead to increased famine in 2027, as I've been warning about for months. Supply chains will crater. Fuel costs will skyrocket in the months ahead, which will raise prices on food and groceries, making many items unaffordable for typical Americans. And there's going to be a mass uprising this year, I predict, probably. Just because living in America will be made increasingly unaffordable by this ongoing war that Trump just feels compelled to pursue for whatever reasons. You know, frankly, I think Trump is a Trojan horse at this point, who is deliberately seeking to dismantle the Constitutional Republic of the United States and mass poison the people with glyphosate and pesticides, and to impoverish the American people to the point where they cannot even afford to eat. The rich get richer, but the middle class get absolutely devastated, and the poor are just totally abandoned under this current system of Trump governance. So the backlash is coming, the political backlash. It's going to be severe. And it will be obvious by November how severe it will be. But I got to tell you, it's not going to be pretty living in this country under the backlash, iron fist rule of Democrats, who will be looking for vengeance in every way possible against every conservative and every Christian and every former Trump supporter, you know. But then again, hey, when they criminally prosecute the Trump family for all the insider trading and all the crypto rug pulls, I'm not defending Trump. I am not defending Trump. In fact, I'm going to sit back. I'm going to cheer any investigations and prosecutions of this corrupt administration, regardless of which party is sponsoring those. I'm not a fan, obviously, of the Democrats, but I am a fan of, you know, eliminating corruption. And probably what we need in this country is an anti-corruption party. If, you know, I guess if there's any hope at all, I'm not sure that any party can save what's left of this, you know, cancerous, collapsing empire. But if there were a party that could do something, it would have to be an anti-corruption party that wasn't on the left or the right. Will that happen? I have no idea. We'll just have to wait and see. But anyway, that's where we are today. Early July here, 2026. So thank you for listening. You can follow more of my work, of course, at brightvideos.com and naturalnews.com. And I urge you, you know, I'm doing a lot of work about EVs now and solar systems and charging EVs with solar. And I will probably have an EV before the end of this year. I'm done buying combustion engine vehicles for lots of reasons. This being one of them, the supply chain shock of hydrocarbons. I'm done. So this is going to sell. This war is going to sell more Teslas and other EVs than any other single event in history. Trump is going to be the EV salesman of the year, by far. And smart people are doing exactly what I'm talking about here, setting up solar panels and some solar generators or power stations. You know, our sponsor, the Satellite Phone Store, they have power stations as well. You can check theirs out. They sell packages with the solar panels too. SAT123.com. And you can charge those power stations and you can use them to charge vehicles. And by the way, if you have any trouble with that, a lot of EVs, they check whether the power station is grounded before they will charge. And there's actually a $10 device you can buy on Amazon that plugs into any of the outlets on a power station that binds the neutral with the ground. And then that allows those power stations to charge EVs. So if you've had trouble charging an EV from a power station, then that's one way to do it. Just understand there may be a safety issue there if there's a lot of static electricity in the air. So do that at your own risk. But that's what I'm putting in place to show you the charging in my studio. I'm going to be doing a video about charging a Tesla Model Y. And I have that device plugged in. And I'm going to be using that because I don't consider it to be a risk, but it's probably not, you know, the recommended way to set those things up. Probably grounding is best, but I don't know. Talk to your local electrician about that. In the meantime, it is true. You can get fuel from the sky for free from sunlight, and you can use it to fuel up your vehicle. And so you can bypass the Strait of Hormuz. You don't need hydrocarbons any longer. The battery technology is very good now. Solar panels are very affordable. Storage batteries, you know, very good, very affordable, relatively speaking. So just in time, because hydrocarbons are going to be less and less reliable and more expensive from here forward, it's rather obvious. All right, so thanks for listening. Mike Adams here. Again, brightvideos.com is where you can find more of my videos and interviews, as well as naturalnews.com. for articles and infographics. Thank you for listening. Take care.
Mike, I just saw a study that somebody tried to peddle. It is out on PubMed right now that says the COVID vaccine prevents cardiac issues. They'll take the truth, turn it on its head, you know, publish an absolute opposite 180 degree lie, and then they declare these things safe and effective. You know, yeah. If you want to see what vaccines do, come to my house. I can show you my 28-year-old son that has level 3 severe autism and has medical issues that we treat and we deal with every day, even though he was vaccine injured 27 years ago. It's bizarre world. Everything is absolutely backwards. And you look at the design that is in place here for mutilation of genitalia, for poisoning your children with glyphosate and with vaccines. It's population control. They do not want us around.
Welcome to today's interview here on brightvideos.com. I'm Mike Adams, and today we are joined by the Chief Scientific Officer of Children's Health Defense. It's Dr. Brian Hooker, PhD. He joins us today to talk about the ongoing assault on the real science showing some of the dangers of vaccines and how vaccines are linked to things like sudden infant death syndrome and other things as well. So welcome, Dr. Hooker. It's always an honor to have you on the show.
Well, thank you so much, Mike. I love your show. I love what you're doing. Anytime I get to hang out with a health ranger, that's a good time. So I'm happy to be here.
Well, we're thrilled to have you here. Last time you were here in studio too. So, this works fine today. So tell us about what's happening, because I understand that there are some very concerted assaults taking place on previously published science papers that are peer-reviewed science papers showing some of the problems with vaccines from different perspectives. So walk us through what's happening, because I also understand that Senator Johnson is involved in one of these as well. So go ahead and give us the brief.
Right. Well, there is a full frontal assault on papers that would question vaccine safety. And so, you know, essentially, the paper that was written by Neil Miller in 2020 on vaccination timing with SIDS, sudden infant death syndrome, it was based on VAERS data. It was not retracted from the Journal Toxicology reports, but they came up with a new category. And I know they've had to have gotten pressure from outside interests, but they came up with a new category called removed. Okay. And they, so they come up with this category. It's not a retraction. It's a removal. And it's to, you know, basically cover their own behind, because they do not have the basis to retract this very, very good and important paper that showed that within 3 days of vaccination, 50% of all SIDS cases occur in that window. And then 75% of all SIDS cases occur within the 1 week window after vaccination. These cluster around vaccination. That's how infants die. We get case reports every day of this type of infant death, of children receiving upwards to 6 or 7, even 8 vaccines in a catch-up appointment and then dying within a week.
That's why I think SIDS actually stands for sudden immunization death syndrome. And
I have to agree.
What's very concerning about this is, of course, parents often get blamed. And we've seen a case recently where a mom, I don't know all the details of the case, but a mom has been arrested and charged with murdering her 2 infants who showed reactions to vaccines initially and then later died. Showing, again, I don't know the details of the case,
right,
but it appears that in the United States, you can be charged with murder for vaccinating your children.
Well, the case involves Andrea Shaw and her twin children, toddlers, died at 18 months, 7 days after their vaccination appointment. And I haven't seen the indictment, so I don't know some of the details that the detectives have come up with. But I do know that Ms. Shaw took her infants, her children, to the ER the day after their vaccination appointment. And clear as the day, it says that they were having an immunization reaction. It's even coded as an immunization reaction using ICD-10 codes. And so, but yet, you know, the powers that be, the authority, they're saying it's death by suffocation. And, you know, God bless, she's just recently had a baby. She was arrested 5 days postpartum after an emergency C-section, and was breastfeeding, and they're not allowing her to see or to breastfeed her young newborn.
Unreal. So there are so many issues to unpack here. One is parental rights, but also the overarching collusion between the vaccine industry and law enforcement.
Right.
And placing blame on parents. But I wanted to get back to the studies that you opened with. I'm sorry about the distraction. But
oh, no worries.
It's absolutely critical that the good science that Neil Miller and others have authored is under assault. And it seems very Orwellian, like a Ministry of Truth effort to whitewash the memory of vaccine harms out of the scientific establishment.
Absolutely. And as Secretary Kennedy is working to modify the vaccination schedule because of the horrible infant mortality rates that we have in the United States, the horrible infant health rates in the United States, I think this attack is no surprise. I co-authored a paper with Neil Miller in 2020, and this was the first PubMed index peer-reviewed study of that compared vaccinated children to unvaccinated children. We looked at vaccines in the first year of life. We found that the children were twice as likely to get diagnosed with developmental delays if they were vaccinated. They were 4.5 times as likely to get an asthma diagnosis. They were 2.5 times as likely to get ear infections and about 2.5 times as likely to have chronic gastrointestinal issues. So this was a seminal paper. Now it has come under fire, and the journal has actually posted a notice of concern on that paper, and they are considering that paper for full retraction, to fully retract it. It's in a journal called Sage Open Medicine. And Mike, it sat there for 6 years. It's been out for 6 years. It's been downloaded almost 300,000 times from the journal's website. You know, just sitting there, minding its own business, being very, very reputable, solid science. It's come under attack before. The journals contacted me, reached out to me. I've addressed all the journal's concerns. But now there is a full frontal assault on a smear website called PubPeer, where there have been false accusations levied about how the data that serve as the basis for the study were handled. Completely false, completely wrong, yet PubPeer evidently has turned the heads of Sage Open Medicine's editors, and now I have this notice of concern.
Right. Now, at the same time that that's going on, the history of these medical journals and science journals is that they would allow obviously fraudulent pro-vaccine studies to stay in the journals for decades in some cases. You know, you can think about the studies of from Thorson, for example,
right?
Thimerosal and so on, who is a convicted felon or a fugitive from justice who was actually, wasn't he brought back to the United States to face prosecution?
Yes, he was indicted in 2011. He fled to Denmark, hid in plain sight from Denmark because Denmark would not extradite him to the United States. He was finally captured in Germany in 2025, and he was recently, very recently, extradited to the United States, and he's being held in Atlanta awaiting trial. He embezzled $1 million worth of CDC research funds.
Right, and so I was wrong. He hasn't been convicted at this point, so I do want to clarify that. He's facing trial, but it was his study that has been cited probably tens of thousands of times to claim that thimerosal is perfectly safe, I believe.
Yes.
I think that's what he's best known for, correct?
That is what he's best known for. There was a study that he co-authored in 2003 with several Danish researchers, many from the Staten Serum Institute, which used to be the Danish vaccine manufacturer. No conflict of interest there. That declared thimerosal safe and not associated with autism whatsoever. He also did a paper in 2002 declaring that the MMR vaccine was safe, made fundamental errors in both papers. I've rebutted both papers, and in the process, one of the rebuttals is published on PubMed. Me and my associate, Carl Jablonowski, rebutted the MMR study, and I rebutted the thimerosal study back in 2004.
So it looks like if there's science that's published that is sloppy and filled with errors, as long as it is pro-vaccine, it's tolerated by the medical journals and science journals and the science establishment. However, if it's a rigorously approached study with good data that reaches the conclusion that there may be harms or risks of harms associated with vaccines, then that is assaulted and smeared and defamed. Does that sound about right?
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head. If you portray vaccines as being perfect fairy dust that anybody can use at any particular point in time, and not only, you know, will it immunize you against infectious diseases, but they'll have all other side benefits. Mike, I just saw a study that somebody tried to peddle. It is out on PubMed right now that says the COVID vaccine prevents cardiac issues. Really?
What, through
really?
Excessive clot formation? How does that work?
Absolutely. It's like they'll take the truth, turn it on its head, you know, publish an absolute opposite 180 degree lie.
Yeah.
You know, based on that, use sham statistics to do it. And then they declare these things safe and effective. You know, yeah. If you want to see what vaccines do, come to my house. I can show you my 28-year-old son that has level 3 severe autism and has medical issues that we treat and we deal with every day, even though he was vaccine injured 27 years ago.
Yes. And, you know, what's very sad about this is, and I want to be clear, I'm not throwing shade at RFK Jr., but I'm very frustrated that a person with his knowledge and with his good faith intent is still unable to achieve the level of reforms that are necessary to protect the children in this country, even though he is the Secretary of HHS. It cements the idea in my mind that you can't change the system from the inside. Now, do you think I'm being a little too dark on that, perhaps, or what is your take on it? And again, I'm not criticizing RFK Jr. here. I'm just saying I wish he could have been able to achieve more, but the system is so corrupt, so deeply entrained in this pro-vaccine mindset that they block him at every turn.
He is fighting arrows left and right, you know, from the front side, from the back side. The deep state, you know, the administrative state is still in the CDC, the FDA, the National Institutes of Health, all the other associated federal agencies. And so, you know, every time he comes up with a reform that would save the health of children, and we can say demonstratively that his reforms would turn about the epidemic of chronic disease in children, then there is resistance at every turn. They hide data from him. They've hid the vaccine safety data link. They tried to hide VAERS from him. Peter Marks, who belongs in prison, bragged about it after he was fired from the FDA. Tom Shimabukuro has tried to hide the vaccine safety data link.
So there's criminal sabotage from within.
Yeah, there is criminal sabotage from within. And I forget his first, Dimitri Daskalakis bragged about playing a shell game and telling Secretary Kennedy that the VSD was erased and didn't exist when he was hiding it.
Is that the guy that has the giant Lucifer tattoo on his chest?
Yeah, he's the leather guy.
Yeah.
Leather guy. I mean, to put it mildly, yes.
Right. So probably not surprising then.
No. I mean, these people are dead set against Secretary Kennedy. Dimitri Daskalakis wanted the hepatitis B shot on the first day of life so somehow he could protect the homosexual community against getting hepatitis B. You know, from whatever the practices that they were, having multiple partners and sex, having, you know, illicit drug use, you name it. But his champion of doing that, trying to protect evidently his community, was to give the hepatitis B shot on the first day of life that contains over 300 micrograms of aluminum that, yes, does get in the brain.
Okay. Let's pivot slightly, but
yes.
there's breaking news today. And I don't know the details, but perhaps you do. I saw a headline and I have to ask you about this, that the Supreme Court, or I think it was the Supreme Court, or maybe it was a district court, had decided that Amish children can be forced into vaccine mandates against the will of the parents. Have you seen that news breaking?
I have not seen that breaking news. I really need to see that.
Yeah, I'll try to pull it up too, because I just saw it a couple hours ago.
I spent the morning away from my computer. This is what happens.
That's wise, actually. Yeah. Given what's happening. Well, I'll try to pull that up as we continue our conversation.
Please do. But, you know, that's, it's obscene. That is medical rape.
Yeah, clearly. I said the same thing on a social post. I said that every human being has the natural right of self-defense against medical violence.
Right.
And a vaccine injection, especially with something that could be engineered, certainly has not been proven safe and effective.
No.
That is an assault. That's a biological or chemical assault on a person.
The people that are designing these things and are pulling the strings, the puppet masters, they don't necessarily want us even alive. You know, let's be truthful. Let's be honest. You know, the COVID shot was a bioweapon. It was. We see carnage every single day from individuals who were coerced, you know, bargained hamburger and French fry into getting the COVID shot.
Yes.
And it is responsible for at least 17 million deaths, at least. I mean, I think that's a super lowball figure.
Well, you and I both understand what's at play here, that this is, it's beyond just an assault. It is an attempt to reduce human populations while calling it medicine. Now, I did bring up this court case, so let me read it for you. It's true. The U.S. Court of Appeals for the Second Circuit has upheld New York schools' vaccine mandates, ruling that they do not violate the constitutional rights of Amish families. So this decision confirms the state's 2019 repeal of religious exemptions for school immunizations is constitutional and applicable. So this is Miller versus McDonald, so involving three Amish schools. So even Amish children can be forced vaccinated by the state of New York, according to this decision.
That is so inconsistent, you know, with any type of moral code. It's so inconsistent with the Nuremberg Code. It's very, very inconsistent with guidelines, workplace guidelines regarding religious exemptions for vaccination on the job place. I mean, why doesn't that apply in schools? I do not get that. I do not understand that. And like it is medical violence.
Yes. Well, I think it's also notable too that this is the Second Circuit mm-hmm. that has made this decision, not the Supreme Court, as I had suspected.
Okay.
But
right.
this explanation says the Supreme Court had previously vacated the lower court's decision in December of 2025 to reconsider the case. So basically, it sounds like they kicked it back to the Second Circuit, which then rendered this
right.
decision. However, it doesn't mean that other, like Fifth Circuit, may rule differently on this, for example.
There's a real disparity right now. I mean, I don't, you know, I'm not a legal authority by any stretch of the imagination, but there's a real disparity depending on which circuit you're in.
Yes.
You know, I live out west in the Ninth Circuit. The Ninth Circuit's a very liberal circuit. I can't remember the circuit that put a stay on all of Secretary Kennedy's changes. That was Brian Nelson out of Connecticut. But, you know, that was a horrendous decision, you know, and it set the health back of children, you know, back into the Stone Age where we were before Secretary Kennedy, excuse me. This is bad news. This is really, really bad news. And, you know, it just solidifies our resolve that we need to continue to fight.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you a question along those lines, because Children's Health Defense, so I'll bring up the website here, is your organization's site. Well, an organization beyond just you, obviously. It's a very large organization where
right.
you are the chief scientific officer. There are a lot of other really wonderful people involved with Children's Health Defense. But my question to you, sir, is that in this age of readily accessible AI analysis of data trends, it seems it would be easier than ever before for anybody who would be interested, including a legislator, for example, to discover the actual ties between these immunizations and SIDS or autism or other side effects. It seems to me that we are in an era where it's harder to cover this up, and yet they are still covering it up. Why is that still happening, or is there a point where the cover-up breaks?
Well, I pray for that every day. that there is a point where it breaks and people can make a clear choice and a decision without these propaganda engines. I've done things like and sort of unwittingly, it's not like I while my days away on AI engines, I pushed Grok into a corner where it would stop answering questions saying that, I cannot answer that question regarding vaccines and autism. And then it happens with regularity. You get to the point where AI basically knows that they're lying, about a particular issue. You've got rightanswers.ai, which I so appreciate. There are other search engines out there. Their names escape me, so I'm just going to stick with rightanswers.ai. But it's very, very clear. I think it's very, very clear to the opposition that we're absolutely right. They don't care. They see this again, to echo what you said, Mike, as population control, and they take down appropriate science as fast as, it gets published. I have a preprint regarding SIDS and or infant death in general and vaccinations in the state of Louisiana. And we show that in some instances, infants were twice as likely to die after they received their 2-month vaccines. That would be 6 vaccines in one visit or a vaccine called Vaxilis, which is a 6-in-1 vaccine. The rate of death was double.
I've seen that.
And they took it down. They took it off of preprints.org. They said that, this is a danger to public health. And so they took it down. We were able to republish it on a preprint server called Zenodo.org. It was Carl Jablonowski and I. Carl's the first author. And it's too hot to handle. It is too hot to handle. But, it's the truth. These data don't lie, and these things are taken down, and the reasons that are given have nothing to do with scientific integrity. It's more that, quote unquote, this is a danger to public health.
So that kind of conclusion from the preprint company is based on a religious understanding of vaccines rather than what I mean is a cult-like obedience to their vaccine narrative rather than scientific scrutiny. So if they say that any science study that shows risks of vaccines is itself a danger to public health, then that argument itself is not coming from a place of scientific thinking. It's coming from a place of the high priesthood with an absolutist high obedience defense of their church of vaccination cults or whatever.
Right.
I mean, that's really the only way to describe it.
It is cult-like. It is individuals, the foundational individuals around vaccination. If you look at the Edward Jenners of the world, they consider themselves godlike. And they did, I'm writing a book. It's going to come out in October from Skyhorse Publishing, called The History of Vaccination, Separating Fact from Fiction. And really, when you look behind the veneer, you see these cult-like figures that led people down the garden path from the absolute very beginning. The book out right now that I would recommend, seeing this foundation, seeing that it's based on an edifice of absolutely nothing, would be Dissolving Illusions by Suzanne Humphrey. Suzanne Humphrey's in Roman, I can never pronounce his name, like Bizenchek or something. And then also Turtles All the Way Down.
Right, right. Excellent books, Dissolving Illusions in particular. I love the charts in that book showing that most
Incredible.
Of these so-called infectious diseases were almost entirely eradicated due to improvements in public sanitation before these vaccines were introduced. It's very compelling.
Absolutely. Without a doubt, we see the measles vaccine. The first version of the measles vaccine came out in 1961. they took it off the market because it was because of adverse events. Imagine that. The next version came out in 1963, but the mortality level due to measles, you know, it wasn't that measles infections themselves were going way down, which they were, but the mortality due to measles was something like 2 in 10,000 cases. These were cases that were mostly individuals who were immunocompromised and had other confounding factors. Okay, so the case-based mortality was less than 0.1%.
Yes, right. And as you said, they were immunocompromised, probably deficient in vitamin D, deficient in trace minerals. I mean, I'm just guessing, but those are common among children who are immunocompromised, in that those deficiencies can be treated for pennies very safely with no risks.
Right. You know, vitamin D, vitamin A, a lot of these go into secondary infections that are treatable, you know, depending on where you are with you know, traditional medicine, or, you know, if you are on the antibiotic side with antibiotics, it's very highly treatable, you know, which I believe, especially in emergency situations, is appropriate. Both girls in Texas who they claim died of the measles died of secondary bacterial infections that were misdiagnosed. It was medical error.
Yes, we see that repeatedly.
Yeah.
But let me ask you about the interaction between our processed food industry and immunosuppression and how the vaccine industry preys upon that. So, you know, I'm a food science guy. I run a food science lab, and I understand a lot about nutrition and disease prevention through phytonutrients in particular. And our food supply is almost completely devoid in terms of the mainstream conventional processed foods, devoid of the nutrients that prevent and in some cases can reverse chronic degenerative disease. For example, there are anti-cancer nutrients throughout the natural food supply in everything from celery, you know, to red grape skins, to fresh produce and ginger root, you know, you name it. There are anti-cancer properties everywhere, but that's not what children are eating. For the most part, they're eating processed, you know, toaster pastries and garbage food. And then in order to claim to prevent the sickness, the establishment says, well, they all need to be vaccinated, instead of addressing the root cause, which is, no, they need actual food. What are your thoughts on that?
No, we need actual food. I'm sorry to interrupt. I mean, you're speaking so much truth about what's going on in the food processing industry. We know that, you know, and this is old statistics, it's probably more, 80% of processed food contains GMOs. And so, you know, you're talking about glyphosate residues, you're talking about BT toxin, which does survive the gut and does end up in the gut and the bloodstream of people who consume BT toxin. You're talking about stripping out nutrition and removing crop diversity in favor of monoculture. And monoculture, these are crops that, you know, they've been bred and bred and bred for productivity. They have not been bred for nutritional quality.
Right, exactly. And even though, you know, here we have President Trump saying that we've entered a new golden age because the stock market bubble keeps going up. And I would say it's impossible to have a golden age in any nation unless you have healthy people. If you don't have health, you don't have abundance. You don't have wealth. You don't have longevity. You don't have productivity. You don't have joy. Without the health, you don't have any of those things. You can't have a golden age unless we get back to fundamental health. And we can't get back to health as long as the food giants and the pharma giants are in charge of government policy. That's what I'm seeing.
I couldn't agree more. You know, looking at the stranglehold that the pharmaceutical industry has on the United States, on the United States government, we are captured people. And then looking at big ag and big food in, you know, within the same breath, we know that corn is king. Corn is king among the crops. And so we have high fructose corn syrup. We have GM corn. We have GM wheat. We have GM soy. The wheat supply in the United States has been destroyed. If you eat organic pasta from Italy, you have a completely different experience going on in your body than even if you have organic wheat in the United States, because it is being dried and ripened with glyphosate, as is oats.
It's funny you mentioned that, because, you know, we test for glyphosate in our lab and we see a lot of glyphosate in oats.
Yeah.
Also lentils, and we're beginning to see it in some wheat products as well, although organic, we haven't seen it in organic wheat. But
well,
we also
God,
know
I'm there's, glad.
There's also a lot of fraud in the organic industry, and we are aware that the USDA requires no testing for glyphosate residues and no testing for heavy metals in any organic products. That is simply not part of the requirement at all. So it can slip through, right? But you mentioned oats. People tend to think of oats or whole wheat as being relatively healthy foods. You know, I'm eating, you know, oats, and I think some health claims are allowed, like lowers cholesterol or something.
Right. Yeah, right. I'm having that Nature Valley granola bar, or I'm having, you know, my Honey Nut Cheerios, so I can lower my cholesterol.
Right. That's what people think. But if the oats are saturated with glyphosate, you know, then we have all of those issues of glyphosate being a chelator, and also being associated in higher concentrations with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. So then the Trump's DOJ argues on behalf of Bayer, and the Supreme Court agrees and grants some level of legal immunity to
That's
Bayer
tragic.
Over the label lack of labeling that warns people about the dangers of glyphosate. So we've become the, you know, the nation that poisons our food and grants immunity to the poisoners.
We have. I mean, this is why people need to watch the Health Ranger. You know, if I can do a shameless plug of your show, and that health freedom needs to expand. I mean, our audience needs to be so much bigger, because, you know, the other news outlets, they are not reporting this. They are not talking about this. We're a nation of very, very sick people. We're a nation of obese people. We're a nation of sickly children. And we have this sort of cataclysm that's happening with vaccinations, because vaccine-based immunity is not durable. It doesn't last. It does not last long. And so the very thing that we're preventing will come back in earnest, and is coming back in earnest.
That is very true. And then it brings us back to the issue of what are the impacts on the future of this nation? If we don't have a healthy population, and yet, let's say we're trying to compete with China on AI,
right?
Or we're trying to compete with Japan on manufacturing excellence, or for example, Toyota just announced, Trump tweeted about this, Toyota's building a big new multi-billion dollar manufacturing facility in Texas to build more cars in Texas. But I'm in Texas. My company hires people in Texas. And I love America and I love Texas as a Texan. I'm not sure that the younger generation has the cognitive and hands-on skills to build cars in Texas.
Right.
Because some of this is because of vaccine damage and malnutrition. And some of it's because everybody's on their mobile phones all day long, so they lost the ability to work with their hands. But even if you want to build cars in Texas, you know, vaccines are factors because of the neurological damage that it causes, and it can set children back many, many years in terms of neurodevelopment, can't it?
Absolutely. We're seeing test scores go down, not up. We're seeing the quality of life go down, not up. And, you know, the World Economic Forum, the industrial cabal, the elitists, they want to take, you know, the United States is specifically targeted, okay, because we are the land of the free and the home of the brave. I mean, you know, We just celebrated our 250th birthday, okay, of a nation of independence, of independent thinkers, of people like you and me and so many more individuals that are free thinkers that want to know the truth. They want to see past the veneer. They, you know, they don't want, you know, the mainstream news pablum. So we're in direct assault. We are absolutely in direct assault. And you look at this next generation, it's very, very difficult. It's very, very difficult to see what has happened with education, with lowering of standards, with even, I mean, down to the CDC saying, okay, we're not going to have a metric anymore at 12 months that children should crawl or that they should babble. We're taking that away.
Wait. Crawl at 12 months? I mean, my God, I was walking long before that as a toddler.
Yeah.
Not just crawling.
Walking.
I mean, walking absolutely. Around. Yeah.
Absolutely. You know. My son walked at 12 months before he regressed at 15 months.
Yeah.
And he stopped walking unassisted. He refused to walk unassisted after his 15-month vaccines. It took him 3 months to get his balance back.
My goodness.
So, I mean, you know, it does damage. Even if you think that you have not sustained a vaccine injury, there is subclinical damage there. I'm sorry, nobody gets a pass. Nobody gets a pass.
That's true. Okay, so let's pivot to the final conversation here today, which is about solutions for our audience, especially for the moms that are watching. Talk about practical things that parents can do to protect their children. I mean, homeschooling is one obvious one. It can be very difficult for some parents, but it's being made a lot easier these days compared to what it used to be. But how can people navigate this system when you have states like New York that say we can force these injections onto you, backed up by the courts? What can parents do?
Well, parents, you know, it starts at home. And so by all means, if you can readily homeschool, if you can't readily homeschool, figure out a way to do it. And I have flat out told people move.
Yes, you know, yes.
If your state, I mean, we have a bunch of California refugees and my hat's off to them. If my son had been in public school, you know, we homeschooled since he was about 4 years old, then we would have left too. We would have had to leave because my son cannot sustain another vaccine injury. His system cannot take it and neither would we ever put him at that particular risk. And no child, period, should be at that particular risk. So, homeschooling, there's so many benefits to it. You know, it's not just to avoid vaccinations, but also make sure that you clean your food supply. Get rid of all processed foods. Get rid of all processed foods. I'm on my own health journey, my weight loss journey. You know, Mike, I've struggled with weight for years. And, you know, when I found a way for it to come off, you know, you're just going to continue on that journey. We need to be a healthy nation. We need to be healthy children. And the, you know, processed food, junk food, fast food, it's unadulterated crap. It is killing you. It's doing nothing.
It's totally toxic.
Absolutely nothing for your system.
And yeah. I would also add now, I'm not a parent. I've never homeschooled, but my understanding from those who have is that they believe that in public schools, about 80% of the time is spent doing things other than teaching. It's discipline time, whatever. It's instructions that aren't education. But at a homeschool setting, you can actually teach your child in 2 hours what would take, 10, and then the rest of the time can be hands-on. Let's go milk the goats. Let's go plant some food. Let's go do things that matter in the real world. And that creates a healthier child, a healthier family, et cetera.
It is, I'm so glad that you brought that up. That is truth. It is so much more efficient when your homeschool has just your children. And then, you're able to cover in 2 hours where they would sit in a classroom for 6 hours. Then the rest of the day is yours.
Yeah.
You limit screen time. You take them out on adventures. They go outside. They play games. They play sports. You can get them involved in activities for socialization. You know, there are, you know, one of the misnomers is that homeschoolers miss out on socialization. There are gobs of opportunities. You know, you just have to look around, have to open your eyes and ears and figure out what those opportunities are. And to me, it was so much more enriching to have my son at home. He missed out on so much garbage, on so much crap, you know, from, you know, drugs and alcohol to gender ideology, to, you know, who knows, whatever, to globalist thinking, to, you know, buying wholesale climate change, all these different things. My son, you know, he emerged from being a non-speaking, non-communicative individual when he was 26 years old. Now he can communicate using a letterboard and a keyboard, and he does just fine, thank you. But we can see the heartache that he missed because he was not in public school.
Right. Well, I'm glad you mentioned that he is communicative now with the letterboard. I wasn't aware of that. That's great news. That also shows there's a lot of internal, you know, processing of letters and words and grammatical structures that is taking place, but there's a barrier to verbal communication, correct?
Right. Right. It was the gross and fine motor that was the issue. It was not intellectual disability whatsoever. I mean, my son, when he started communicating, was doing calculus that I had never seen. You know, I had 2 years of calculus as an engineering program when I was an undergrad. That was it. And so he came out, he's like, let's do tensor calculus. I'm like, I don't even know what that is. But they learn. I mean, God loves your kids more than you do. And so he finds a way.
One more question, since you mentioned the gender ideology nonsense that's being pushed on children. In the state of Oregon, my understanding is that now, because of a new law there, when the child reaches the age of 13, the parents are no longer allowed to access the child's medical records at 13, because the state says that the child has the choice of what gender they want to be, and that choice will be kept secret from the parents. Were you aware of this?
No, I was not. I was not aware of that.
Yeah, it's a brand new law, and that's my understanding of it. I hope I'm correct in explaining that. It sounds exactly like something Oregon would do.
Right. Absolutely. Well, they are, you know, the gender ideology is pervasive up there. I live in Redding, California. It's very, very libertarian, very, very much in the sticks, very much thumbs their nose at Sacramento, California, our capital. But, you know, our neighbors to the north, I mean, especially, you know, sort of in the corridor around Portland, the I-5 corridor, is very, very liberal. And I would dare say that hiding medical records of a 13-year-old from their parents is downright dangerous.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. You know, you're playing with fire on so many different levels that goes beyond the gender argument and goes into, you know, being able to make the best medical decisions for an individual that's not capable of making those decisions yet.
Yeah, and it just goes to show you how these issues transcend the, you know, the political identity. And, you know, we're talking about sort of liberals or leftists, whereas both Republicans and Democrats want to force vaccinate your child for the most part. Right. But the liberals also want to mutilate your child with their genitalia, which typically the conservatives don't want to do that. They have other ways to damage your child, like with glyphosate. So
glyphosate, right. Vaccines, exactly.
So the Republicans are pro poisoning the food supply. The Democrats are pro mutilation and hiding that from your parents. And it's like, what on earth is going on here? Did I wake up in, like, you know, opposite universe here? I feel like the world's gone insane with this stuff.
I mean, it has. It has. It has gone absolutely insane. Remember the old Superman comics with Bizarro Superman? It's Bizarro World. Everything is absolutely backwards. And you look at the design that is in place here for mutilation of genitalia, for poisoning your children with glyphosate and with vaccines, with allopathic medicine. It's population control. They do not want us around. We do not need the cut of the 500 million people that they want to inhabit the earth.
Well, and now we know why, Brian, because the AI data centers are rising up. And as I warned, those data centers, they need water, they need kilowatt hours from the power grid, and they need your farmland. So now we see the direct competition between humans and the AI data centers. And guess which one the establishment is going to give preference to? Not
we,
us.
We have to fight back more than ever. We have to fight back at the local level, at the county and the state level, at the federal level. People's voices are powerful. They need to be heard. They need to come out of the woodwork. They need to turn off the TV and stop getting news from the mainstream media, period.
That's for sure. Yeah. They need to get news from me and you. And let me give out your website again, childrenshealthdefense.org. And right. Also, Brian, when your new book comes out from Skyhorse, please give me a heads up so we can schedule you for an interview about that book. And I would also love to add the text of that book to our brightanswers.ai research engine as a reference item, you know, so we can reference
that. That would be the bomb. That would be so cool.
All you got to do is send me the PDF and I'll make it happen.
It's going to be a 2-volume set. I mean, we really drill down in this particular book. It's a 2-volume set. First volume, hopefully our release date is October 27th, 2026. Also makes a nice Christmas gift. Sorry.
It's true.
It's a little shameless plug. But
well, we'll plug it again in October. So
Yeah, absolutely. History of Vaccination, Volume 1, Separating Fact from Fiction by me with the help of John Michael Dumay, who used to be a reporter at Children's Health Defense and The Defender.
Okay, great. And then there's a Volume 2 coming out next year?
Yeah, Volume 2 is coming out. I'm hoping that it will be done by March, April, 2027 could be the release date or at least by the summer. So,
okay. Brian, talk to me after the show because I can get you special access to our research engine because we have indexed millions of science papers and books with accurate citations. In case you want to use that, I can give you a special backdoor access to that engine.
Please,
maybe helpful.
Please, that would be so helpful. We can't trust the answers from standard AI.
No. And this isn't even. I'm not even saying an AI engine, but rather just a research engine.
Thank you. You
could use also to verify this all the citations in your book just to triple check and make sure that those are correct citations and things like that. I mean, there's a lot of different uses for the research engine, but I can get you access to that.
We need to do that. I appreciate that so much, Mike. And the infrastructure that you're building that gives people an alternative. I mean, people need to know about this. People need to know brightanswers.ai. People need to know about your food processing company, about your the laboratory facilities. I mean, you're building a new facility right now. Is that correct?
Our new lab is up and running. Here's brightanswers.ai, and that's knowledge without censorship. People can use that for free. But yeah, next time you come back, Brian, I'll give you a tour of our lab. Not only have we added dioxin and PCB testing with a GC triple quad instrument, but on top of that, we have another brand new microscope, and we are about to start testing forever chemicals or PFAS chemicals in food as well. Using, I think that one's done. We can actually look at 40 analytes with a single quad liquid chromatography method in that case. So. When you come, we'll give you the full tour. Whenever you happen to be in town for an event or something, I'll give you the full tour. And
I love that. Geeking out with Mike Adams is the coolest thing ever. It is the coolest thing ever. You've got LCMS. Do you have Tandem? Do you have any Tandem mass spec yet? Or yeah. Have Tandem? Okay, MS.
We run a triple quad on our glyphosate testing.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Oh, that is so exciting. No, I saw the footprint. I didn't see the instruments in place, but I saw the footprint and was giddy. I mean, you know, I can't wait to see it.
It's so cool. We just got another new ICP-MS for metals analysis also. So we've been adding instruments. I think we're up to 10 mass spec instruments now. And it's the lab is just rocking. We keep expanding our analytes and targets for everything. So anyway, yeah, we'll geek out together when you come to Texas. That's for sure.
I look forward to it. Absolutely.
All right. Well, thank you, Brian. Keep up the amazing work and keep me posted about your book and any other important announcements. And we'll get you back on the show.
All right. Thank you so much, Mike. It's always a pleasure.
Pleasure's all mine. I'm honored to have you on. Have a great rest of your day. And folks, there you go. Childrenshealthdefense.org is the website. And Brian Hooker, Chief Scientific Officer there, who's doing extraordinary work. We really appreciate his contributions to human society. So thank you for watching. You can watch more interviews and podcasts at brightvideos.com, or you can read my articles at naturalnews.com. And you can use for free our deep research AI engine at brightanswers.ai. Thanks for watching. Take care. Right now, more than ever, it's critical to eliminate counterparty risk. That's my belief. And don't take this as financial advice, because I'm not your financial advisor. But when you want physical gold and silver in your hands, or vaulted, professionally vaulted, insured, high security vault, etc., that eliminates that counterparty risk, which I think is an extreme risk right now. I think banks are going to fail, and we're going to have bank bail-ins. The currency is failing every day, you know, kind of little by little, because of all the money printing and the valuation erosion that's accelerating. Also, because of what's happening in the Middle East, more and more countries are agreeing to sell oil in currencies other than the dollar. And the only way that treasury yields are kept low is by the Fed printing money and buying our own debt, because there aren't enough international buyers to buy our debt anymore. So our country's like a snake eating its own tail financially. It's buying its own debt, and this is going to end badly. And when it does, in my opinion, those who hold dollars, even in bank accounts or in the stock market or whatever, they're going to be devastated by the losses. Gold and silver are the best way, in my opinion, to preserve your assets and make it through the coming storm. And the best place to get gold and silver is a company I've been working with, the original founders of the group, for 6 or 7 years now. Today it's called Battalion Metals, and you can reach them at metalswithmike.com. And the reason it's called Battalion Metals now is because they did a joint venture with Tucker Carlson. So Tucker Carlson is the co-founder of Battalion Metals. It's the same group I've worked with for years. And let me tell you about these people. They are pro-freedom, pro-liberty, pro-Ron Paul type of people. They respect your privacy. They understand the importance of your security, your privacy, and the importance of giving you gold and silver at the best possible competitive prices. So there's no bait and switch. There's no, you know, rigging. There's no weird coins like, here, have this 1.5 ounce thing that nobody knows what it is. They don't play games. Otherwise, I wouldn't promote them. This is the same company, metalswithmike.com. Battalion Metals. This is the same group that I recommend to my family, to my friends, and that I use myself. And I stack gold and silver every month, just a certain amount every month, and I have it vaulted with their vaults because I know I can trust them, because they're professionals. They're high integrity people. They're not fly by night. They are the kind of people that you can trust. Again, otherwise I wouldn't even be associated with them. So when you want to get gold and silver in your hands and eliminate that counterparty risk, this is the way to do it. Just go to metalswithmike.com. You can see the prices right there online in real time at Battalion Metals, or you can schedule a call with them. Just use this button right here, schedule a call. And they are trustworthy, high integrity, knowledgeable people who can help you devise a strategy that's suitable for you. Just remember, I'm not your financial advisor. I can't give you an investment strategy personalized for you, you need to do that yourself with your own advisors. You can talk with Battalion Metals and they can help give you a lot of information and some planning as well. But make the best decision for you. And you're going to make it through this. You'll make it through the storm, even as other people lose the value of their dollars or their other investments. Gold and silver will make it through. And right now, in my opinion, gold and silver are still at an incredible buying opportunity in terms of price compared to where they're going to be represented in dollars in the near future. That's my opinion. Do your own research. Do what's best for you. And check it all out at metalswithmike.com. So thanks for watching. I'm Mike Adams, the Health Ranger. God bless you all. Take care.